Hey, Property Insiders, I'm Mike Stenhouse, and this is the Inside Property Investing Podcast. Today, we've got something a little bit different, as last week I was invited on HMO Heroes, a Facebook Live channel with Stephanie Taylor, where she interviewed me. So today's episode is a recording of that. Going behind the scenes into our own journey, we've shared a lot of this before, but there's a lot of good nuggets and wisdom in here as well, I hope. So let me know if you enjoy it. But before we get into that, let's just take a minute to thank our sponsors. Since we started working with Harvey Bowes for our own mortgages around 3 years ago, we've been blown away by the service that they offer, and in that time, they've continued to get better and better. They are, in my opinion, the best mortgage advisor in the UK, particularly when it comes to providing expert advice on investment finance options and how to structure deals in the best way. With a growing team, each and every applicant is assigned a specific mortgage broker and a case handler to make sure your application is dealt with efficiently. And given their team of brokers are property investors themselves, you know you'll be dealing with someone who understands your needs. Whether you're looking for a simple buy-to-let mortgage or a specialist product for your latest HMO, Harvey Bowes can help you due to their excellent relationships with many of the key lenders in the UK market. They can arrange bridging products, development finance, commercial mortgages, and even have an increasing number of specialist products for serviced accommodation and holiday let operators. They're quick when you need it, providing same-day agreements in principle to support your offers and remortgages within 6 months to free up your capital for the next deal. And they have a growing expertise in helping expat and foreign nationals obtain investment finance as well. Whether you've got a finance-related query or you're ready to submit a mortgage application, I can highly recommend the team at Harvey Bowes. Get in touch via harveybowes.com or call them on 02921 754 150. And remember to tell them you heard about them on the podcast.
So, let me tell you about our guest tonight. Now, our guest tonight is Mike Stenhouse of Inside Property Investing. And many of you will know that podcast. It's one of the best known podcasts in property. And it was the one that really changed my viewpoint about whether we could actually make it a full-time business for ourselves. So when I was still working in finance, I used to go at lunchtime and in the evenings and listen avidly to the Inside Property Investing podcast for the warts and all stories about how people from all sorts of different backgrounds, all sorts of different strategies were making property work for them as a full-time business. But what I think a lot of people don't realise is that Mike and Victoria are also incredibly successful property investors themselves. And so that's what we're going to be talking about tonight and digging down into their success. But some of the headlines for you is that in a very short period of time, Mike has accrued £1.5 million of private investor finance. They built up significant cash flow within their business that has allowed them both to leave the corporate world and go into property full time. They've made commercial to residential conversions really work for their business, and HMOs have become so competitive now. And I think the perspective that Mike brings to it about how to do those commercial to resi conversions to really make your product stand out. And not only that, they've also begun new build developments. And he's going to talk us through some of his new build developments that have some big six-figure payoffs. So really excited to hear about that. And then, of course, there's what I talked about earlier, which is the incredible brand and online community of tens of thousands of people that Mike has built up. And remember, it's a two-way thing tonight. So if you've got any questions for Mike about any aspect of HMO investing, do ask them in the comments. And if you're watching this after the live, you can still ask in the comments and we will come back to you and answer your questions. So without any, give us a thumbs up if you're online so we can see you, and I will give you a shout out if we can see you online. So give us a thumbs up if you're watching. So without any further ado, I want to say welcome to the show, HMO hero Mike Stenhouse.
Hey, Stephanie. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
It is my absolute pleasure. So how does it feel to be on the other side of the, well, it's not quite the other side of the camera, but to be the one who's being asked the questions instead of the
I know what you mean. It's intimidating. You know, a lot of people say, how do you get by doing all these interviews and everything? And actually, it's really easy being in my situation most of the time because I just ask the same questions. It's the other people that are interesting and have got all the exciting stories to tell. So I'm hoping I can live up to, some of the past guests that we've had on and give you some good information and insights tonight. But yeah, I'll try to keep my nerves to a minimum. And like I say, hopefully I can help a few people out with their own investing as well.
Brilliant. No, absolutely you will. So let's kick it off, Mike, and tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into property.
This story really involves two people, myself and my wife. We have been investing together pretty much from the day we met about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, something like that. She's probably going to scowl at me the fact I don't know the exact year that it was that we met, but she'll let me off, I'm sure. So I'd grown up watching, you know, Homes Under the Hammer and Property Ladder and just thought that this was the dream, taking rundown properties and bringing them back to life, really. We started off with a few single lets and a few simple flips. We met when we were working full time in Newcastle on a graduate scheme, and we're doing it in the side evenings and weekends. We were stripping wallpaper and fitting kitchens and just generally getting our hands dirty and trying to make a little bit of extra cash. And then gradually we kind of came to the conclusion that we thought this could become a full-time income for us. So we started to think about how we could make the transition. We realized that HMOs were going to give us the quickest cash flow and the highest cash flow. So we started to look at them more seriously. I left the corporate world first of all, and my initial step was to go and work with Victoria's father, who's got a letting agency. I thought that was a nice transition into the property world. And we started to build up our HMO portfolio. We stopped doing as many flips and we were just focused on building up rooms in shared houses. Replaced my income whilst Victoria was still working full time. And then as we started to replace her income, we decided that it was time for her to make the leap as well. So that was coming up for 2 years ago now that Victoria left the corporate world. And since then, we've just been working flat out, as you said, both on our own property investing and growing the podcast side of the business as well. And it's predominantly been driven from HMOs, but we do a lot of other bits and pieces as well. We're not sort of pigeonholed by a single strategy. So as you mentioned, we've done commercial conversions. We've got our first new build on the go. We still do the occasional flip. And actually, we're quite excited by single lets again as well. So yeah, lots going on. And that's the kind of the abridged history, I suppose.
Fantastic. And I know that you've got six projects on the go right now. So we are going to deep dive into all of that. But I just want to say a quick hello to the people who I can see watching. I know there are a few more of you, but I can only see if you've done something. So hi, Vince. Hi, Lucky, Nikki and Karen and Adewale. And now if you've got any questions, guys, as we go through, do put them in the comments. So let's just go through. So your current number of HMO rooms is how many, Mike?
So we've got a little over 50 rooms at the moment. And obviously, you know, there's more in the pipeline. There's more that we are appraising. We're hoping to get up to 100 rooms in the not too distant future. But yeah, currently sitting just over 50.
Oh, that's interesting. So you are still really growing the HMO side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Our attention has been split a little bit to go and look at other sources of income, other investment strategies, but HMOs still form a big part of that. The market has changed since we got started, but we're still very confident and bullish on it and think that the right product and the right location is still a very strong investment for us. So yeah, we're actively growing that.
That's good to know. So let's get onto these six projects that you've got happening right now. Tell us about them and what they are.
Okay. This is probably where you're going to know more than me, because I remember when we spoke about this beforehand, I probably had the list in front of me. We've got in our office, we've got a blackboard on the wall and it's got all of our projects listed on it. And I'm not sitting in our office today, I'm sitting in our kitchen. So I don't have that, that memory jog in front of me, but we have got, to be clear up front, I suppose, some of these projects that we are working on, we work for investors from time to time. So some of these are our own projects. Some we are doing as joint ventures, and some one at the moment I think we are doing purely as a project management, like a service, I suppose, for another investor. So that's the one that's closest to completion. So that's why I wanted to get the caveat in there. I'll probably start from closest to completion. We've got four apartments in Warrington. It was an old office building, two-story office building that we've converted into four one-bedroom apartments. Quite a straightforward refurbishment, took it through planning permission. Relatively simple conversion, wasn't a huge amount of structural work required. And that should be finished in a couple of weeks. We're down to decorating and flooring going in. So that one should be ticked off pretty soon. We have then got a couple of projects in flight. One is a ground floor shop. It's a barbershop at the moment with an office space above it that we're converting into two apartments. That's one of our own projects. And with that one, originally the plan was to create a four or five bed HMO apartment above the shop. Our plans have changed on that one slightly, and it's now going to be two separate apartments. One which we're hopefully going to live in for a little while, because we have just yesterday accepted an offer to sell our own house. And then when we've sold, when we don't need that anymore, we're hopefully going to rent it out as a serviced accommodation, which will be our first SA. We've got a new build, which is our first new build. It was a car park. It still is a car park a lot longer. It's been a car park a lot longer than I wanted it to be. I thought we would have started it before now, but new builds, for me, are very much out of my comfort zone. So we've got a lot of learnings on that one. It's everything's taken a little bit longer than we anticipated, but the end game hopefully will be a ground floor commercial space and five apartments above it, a mix of two beds and one beds. That's in Stockport. So we live in the Northwest, and that's predominantly where we invest. We've got a couple of commercial to resi HMO conversions, just getting started, like just about to start the strip out. One of them will be an eight bed, the other one will be a six bed. And that's five. I'm sure there's another one in there somewhere, but that's kind of the gist of the type of stuff that we're working on.
This is the kind of guy we're dealing with. So many projects on the go. He doesn't know them all off the top of his head. So I know you've got a slightly bigger team now. You've taken some staff on. So tell us about that.
Yeah, that's part of the reason I'm not entirely sure exactly what is going on with everything. So our team started off growing. Started off as a team of one with myself, doing literally everything. I was very much a landlord rather than an investor, getting my hands dirty, trying to fix everything that went wrong, managing the projects myself. Then Victoria stepped on board about 2 years ago almost, and that was a massive boost to what we were able to do. It's amazing how much more you can do with two people rather than one. And once we realized that, we thought, no, let's just keep growing the team as soon as we need someone, rather than leaving it too long. Our plan recently has just been, let's grow the team, grow the projects, and hopefully as a result of that, grow our income. So our first kind of hire outside of the family was Sai, our project manager. He had been our plumber for 5 years. We'd worked with him on a lot of projects. And I was just chatting to him one day, whilst he was fitting a bathroom suite or something, and he said, hang on, I need to turn off this podcast I'm listening to. And it turns out he was listening to our podcast. He'd been listening to it in the background, hadn't told us, but he had aspirations to get into investing himself. So over the course of 12 months or so, we were having chats about how he could help us out, how we could help him out. And it was a natural fit. So he manages most of our projects now on a sort of as a site project manager. We're still involved in the sourcing, the financing, planning permission. But once we have got the keys and it's ready to start out, he's responsible for schedules and budgets and making sure everyone is on site when they're supposed to be. After that, a couple of months after that, we took on Catherine, our lettings manager, because again, we were freed up our time from having to visit site every day. The next thing that we were taking up a lot of our time was managing our housemates. Typically a great group of people, but as you know, with house shares and with HMOs, a lot of the inquiries and the issues are out of office hours. People want a view in the evenings and the weekends. If something breaks, they tell you about it when they get home from work. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, let's try to make that element of our life a little bit easier. So Catherine came on board the start of this year. So that's probably just over 6 months now. And we've effectively created an in-house letting agency We predominantly manage our own portfolio plus one or two others that we have either sourced or project managed or both for other people. But it's basically just our own portfolio that she takes care of. And then very recently, within the last 2 months, we took on a guy called Robert, who's just graduated from an English literature degree, and he helps us more on the podcast side of things. So less relevant to growing our portfolio, but still, you know, it was just a case of what is the next logical step? What's the pain point for us that we can try to outsource easily? So yeah, we're now up to three. Hopefully we've got the fourth one starting before the end of the year, and then we'll just continue to grow as we see.
What will be the fourth person? What role are you looking to appoint?
That is someone else that's going to be involved in the, actually, I suppose there's maybe two hires on the horizon. So the first one that we've got lined up is a guy that's hopefully joining us on the podcast side of things. We'll hopefully get on to talk about our plans for next year for leaving the UK, but this is a much more experienced on board and grow that side of things, because it's something that Victoria and I are both really passionate about. But in tandem with that, we will at some point be looking to take on another person to support Catherine on the letting side of things, and also just do a bit more of the, so I suppose, a crossover role between the lettings side of things and also some of the project management stuff, getting valuations submitted to the valuation office, dealing with day-to-day requests for like council tax banding and all that sort of stuff, more admin-based side of things on the projects. So don't know exactly when they'll come on board yet, but hopefully within the next 6 months.
And we've got other things we want to dive into, but while we're on building your team, just want to talk to you quickly about how you're doing that. Are you taking people on a self-employed basis or on a permanent basis, or can you expand a bit on that?
Yeah, a bit of a mix. So we took Catherine on, our lettings manager, full-time employee, on payroll, paying tax and national insurance and all the other expensive bits and pieces that come with hiring a member of staff. But we wanted her to feel part of our team from day one. We knew that it was a role that wasn't going to be 100% of her time to start with, but we wanted her, you know, she felt like a great fit for us, and we just wanted to show to her that we were serious about her future with us as well. So yeah, we made the decision to take her on a full-time sort of employee basis. And a lot of people were like, oh, you could probably do it cheaper if you took her on as a freelancer, if she was self-employed or whatever else. But I think for us, it was just a case of, it felt like the right thing to do. We want to grow a business as well as a property portfolio, and businesses have employees. So we would need to bite the bullet at some point. So we just thought, you know, let's start right from day one. Sai, our project manager, is a bit of a different setup. So he has a separate construction company, and that was there's a couple of reasons that we have split that out from a sort of a legal and a liability point of view, but also just because he wants to continue to grow that side of his own business as well. So he only works for us, but he is self-employed. So just for various reasons, that seemed like the most logical way to do that. Yeah. Robert is just on a freelance basis with us just now, a trial. I suppose he's only just graduated, but the plan is to take him full time in the near future. So yeah, it's been a bit of a mix, but like I say, you know, our plan is to do it by the book most of the time, and just start to grow the team officially.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. Thanks for sharing that with us. So guys, the six projects going on, what I had down were three HMOs, two projects where you're converting to apartments, and the new build. So let's move on a little bit and look at a bit more detail about why you're positioning yourself the way you are with the commercial to residential. And maybe I know that you're going to give us the numbers from one of your commercial to residential projects. So can you talk to us a bit about that, Mike?
Yeah, so I guess the real reason that we moved towards the commercial conversions was, as I said earlier, we're still very bullish on the HMO market, but we were aware that there was increasing competition, particularly in our area. The competition was increasing, the quality and the standards were increasing as well. And trying to find deals that stacked up that we could create the standard of accommodation that we wanted to with all the competition, with everyone else that was looking at those same res, they're going to make the numbers work. We came across our first commercial conversion, I think it was 2000 and was it maybe sometime 2016, I think, was when we did our first one. So this was only a couple of years ago. And what we realized when we started looking at that was that the price per square foot to buy commercial property in our area was significantly cheaper than the price per square foot of residential property. So immediately we were getting a discount.
What kind there of differential, are, Mike?
Sorry?
What kind of differential between resi and commercial do you reckon?
Good question. I think, I don't know. I mean, I'd say ballpark maybe 30% cheaper than what we would have had to pay for the same square footage of residential. I'll go and dig into that, actually, now that you've asked that. If I don't know the answer, I'll go and figure it out. But that would be an interesting look into price per square foot of residential versus commercial. So if I do find it out, I'll come back and let you know. But yeah, I'd say, you know, finger in the air guess, probably at least 30% discount. So it was a way for us to get the space that we needed to create large HMOs without the competition. There weren't as many people looking at commercial property as there were. I've started to get a bit. Let me stick my headphones in and see if it disappears. Actually, has it gone?
Yeah.
It seems to have gone anyway. Okay, sorry about that, Stephanie. There was a lot less competition with the commercial stuff as well. So it was sitting there at a pretty good price and very few people were looking at it. And I think there wasn't any major complexities in the types of projects that we were looking at, but there was, I guess, maybe a bit of a stigma or a bit of uncertainty of people thinking, well, it's commercial conversion, it must be a lot more complicated. There are certainly some elements that make it a little bit more long-winded. There are a few more elements that you need to comply with from like a building control point of view. Planning can sometimes be a little bit more awkward, but ultimately you're still taking something that's run down, ripping everything out and starting from scratch. You've got four walls and you're just filling it in with bedrooms, bathrooms, communal space, en suites, all that sort of stuff. It was very similar. So we started to look at these and think, actually, across the board, commercial space is cheaper, so we should be looking at that. And as a result of looking at these commercial projects, we've been able to create HMOs that have got significantly more communal space, significantly larger bedrooms, more en suites per bedroom than we would be able to squeeze into a terraced house or a semi-detached. So actually, it seemed like a bit of a no-brainer. And now more people are starting to look at the commercial conversions as well. So we maybe need to think ahead and say, well, okay, if everyone's going to start moving into that market, what do we do next? Maybe that's new build HMOs. I don't know. But it was really just a case of looking at our market, seeing where the opportunities were, seeing what everyone else was doing and try to do things a little bit differently. So in terms of the numbers on one, a lot of people who listen to the podcast will be familiar with our Churchgate HMO, which is a big 9-bedroom. That's the first one that we did. It's over 3 stories and the entire ground floor, which is, I can't remember the square footage of it, but the entire ground floor is all communal space. So down there, we have got a massive open plan kitchen diner. We have got a lounge. We've got a separate cinema room and a big utility room that's got all of our plant for boilers and heater, storage tanks, washers and dryers. And we've still been able to get 9 bedrooms on the 2 floors above it for an average of sort of 12 to 15 square meter bedrooms. So it's a big old room. We bought that for £210,000. We spent about £120,000 renovating it. So that was like £330,000. And we sort of revalued around about £420,000, something like that. So we got effectively all of our cash back out of it. We left about £50,000 in it. A month. Something like that.
Say that again, Mike. So it's netting you £2,500 a month.
Yeah, on average.
That is incredible. I love those figures. So it was over £300,000 all in, and then you revalued at £420,000.
Yes, I think it was. Either 400 or 450. Remember, Victoria. Yeah. 450, sorry, Victoria. 450.
What a deal.
Yeah, exactly. That was, yeah, exactly. Numbers like that. yeah, there's a lot of good elements to that. And there was a lot of difficulties and struggles as well in the way, but ultimately, they're about the long-term
rather than the short-term.
You want to make $2.5 million a month.
But hopefully it will be okay. We'll just crack on.
Yeah, and a little bit erratic,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we have had a couple of comments. So, but you can't guess who this comment's from. Who's your favourite in your current HMO mastermind class, and is he also the most gorgeous?
Well, Dan, to be fair, in terms of some in our mastermind, it could be any one of them. They're a good bunch, good looking bunch of people as well. I assume that is from our friend Dan. He is a great guy. He's got, you know, he's got projects that actually, was he on recently?
Well, he was almost on recently, but he'll be on again on the 9th of September.
So, yeah, I would have to say I don't have any favorites. That's the politically correct answer. They're a great group of people. And, you know, it is, I guess the thing is as well, you know, just on the point of like Dan's projects, if you've seen any of the details of what he has done, and, you know, I'm talking about $2,500 a month. Like, I guess I want to make 2 points here. First of all, is that projects like this do exist, and they are still out there. In today's market, we are still appraising deals that would give us similar returns, or certainly similar percent ROIs, if not necessarily the exact figures. Our return on investment would still be the same, get most of our cash back out, and almost an infinite ROI. That is one thing I'd like to say. But the other thing, I suppose, is that I don't want people sitting here thinking, okay, $2,500 a month, I need to go and find a deal that makes me $2,500 a month, or it doesn't make sense. That is one deal. And the reason I talk about it is because it's really good. But we do projects that will make us £600, £700, £800 a month. And for most people, that's a hefty pay rise. If you're in a full-time job and you got £700 a month pay rise, I think that's a phenomenal boost in most people's income. Even if you need to leave, you know, 20 grand, 30 grand, 40 grand in it, the return on investment is still going to be, you know, we aim for a minimum ROI of 20%. And people look at deals and think, oh, I've got to leave 30 grand in it and it's only going to make me, this is where my maths lets me down here, but what, £6,000 a year, would that be 20%, whatever the number would be? And they're thinking, you know, it's not great, it's a lot of money to leave in it. There aren't any other investments that would give you similar sorts of returns. So for me, I think it's a case of, you know, be realistic in your expectations, and if something gives you a 20% return, even if it has to leave 30 grand in it, that's still a phenomenal deal. So don't be put, I think a lot of people see the big deals that are spoken about on Facebook and social media and think if it's not that good, it's not worth it. But I think that's a fallacy. I think, you know, a £600, £700 a month project is a phenomenal deal in itself. So,
yeah. And obviously the finish you're putting on these properties is fantastic as well. I will try and, or if you could post some pictures of some of them, comments, that'd be amazing. And I'll just say a quick hello to Brian, Isfan, David, Christian, and thanks, Dan. Dan said my hair looks nice, so thanks for that, Dan. You're my favourite, Dan. Okay. And Wendy. Wendy's just come on. Hi, Wendy. So
tell Dan that he's supposed to be on holiday, so he'd be relaxing instead of watching this.
Yeah, this is relaxing. Okay. Entertainments. So Mike, that's one of your commercial to resis. That's a phenomenal one. Really love the sound of that one. And you've also got your new build, so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it felt like moving into new builds was a natural evolution for us. We'd done quite a few commercial conversions by this point. The projects were getting sort of bigger and scarier and more lucrative. And we just thought, what's next? Well, you know, the next step seemed to be, let's go and build something. I don't regret it at all. It has taught us a lot. I think we would be reluctant to rush out and do another new build. There is definitely something to be said for sticking with what you know, sticking with what your strengths are, what you've got experience in already. Having said that, though, it is still going to be a good project when it finally gets finished. It is just, as I said earlier, taking us a lot longer than we anticipated. It was a car park that we bought with planning permission already in place. So that kind of ticked one of the boxes in our due diligence. We didn't need to worry about getting planning permission approved because it was already done. We've started the project, but it is very much still in early stages. And hopefully, some point in 2019, I'm going to keep our goal very wide here. Some point within the next 12 months, I would like to think that that project is complete. So the planning had been approved for an office, like an open plan office space on the ground floor. I think it's about 70 square meters per floor. Two apartments on the first floor, a two bed and a one bed. Two apartments on the second floor, a two bed and a one bed. And then a single one bed apartment in the loft space. So that, again, the figures, I'm going to need to reach into the depths of my mind here. And these are sort of broadly speaking. We bought the land for about 120 from memory. The build on that, plus all of our fees and everything, is probably going to take us up to a total spend of around about $500,000. And the GDV on it should be somewhere between $600,000 and $700,000. Probably, I think it's about $660,000 from memory. So potential net over $100,000 by the time we've paid our cost of finance and everything, which is great. But yeah, you start to think, maybe would we have been better off doing two smaller commercial conversions and making $50,000 on each of them that we were comfortable with and could have churned out in half the time. So it's an exciting project. I've been speaking about it recently a few times, and it's usually in a sort of negative sense about, don't rush into these things. Ultimately, I'm sure we'll still look back fondly on it. And with numbers like that, again, it's a good project, but it's just, it's kind of stepping outside of your comfort zone. We probably took a step too far, and we're just kind of dealing with the consequences of that now and making sure that we're doing everything properly. Because the last thing you want to do is build something and then find out that you've made a big mistake on it. So, just sort of going quite tentatively with it at the moment.
Yeah. So, Mike, your favourite has asked a question again. What sort of surveys have you had done pre-commencement for the new build?
Interesting question. So we have had the bulk of it, I suppose, has been on the groundwork side of things. So we've had to make sure. So the foundation plan for this is quite interesting. We're building up close to the boundary of our neighbor, I suppose. Which has got very shallow foundations, and our own boundary abuts a pavement. So it's in quite a restricted site, which makes things very difficult. So our foundation plans are, 16 piles, which go down about 5 meters, and then we'll be putting in sort of reinforced concrete over the top of that. So it's a bit unusual. It's probably the biggest hurdle in this, I suppose, has been deciding on that foundation plan with our structural engineers and our architects. So there were a lot of ground surveys and samples done with that regard. But other than that, we haven't done a huge amount. Because planning was already in place, there weren't a huge number of things that we had to do, in terms of like highways reports or anything like that. A lot of that work had been done. So it was actually pretty straightforward. We bought it, and the contaminated land reports had already been done, and asbestos surveys on the remainder of the building that was already there. So there was a lot done, but not a huge amount that we've actually had to do. And I know, I think Dan is about to start on his first new build in the near future, which is probably why he's so interested in this. But we actually had quite an easy time of it in that regard.
Okay. And another question was from Dan as well. Why not make the new build in HMO, guessing that it was planning?
So a couple of things. One is that we may decide to sell it. So a lot of our projects are for ongoing income, but also we need to replenish our cash pot from time to time. Not all of our deals we get all of our money back out of. And also as we scale up to do bigger deals, even if we got all of our cash out of every one of them, we're doing more projects more frequently and on a larger scale. So we still need either our own cash or outside investment. I'd far rather be using our own cash. So every so often we'll do a project to sell to replenish the pot. So that's one reason why we're doing it. Also, it's in an area close to a couple of our other HMOs. And one thing that we don't like to do is to compete with ourselves on the HMO market. If we put a room on the market because we get a vacancy or because we bring a new house to the market, we don't want any rooms in any of our other houses to be a viable alternative for people coming to view it. We're happy to compete with other people, but we don't want to compete with ourselves. And this one would put us in pretty close competition with one of our HMOs. So for us, we thought, well, it makes sense as single lets. Again, we could SA it if we do decide to hang on to it. So depending on which way we go, if we sell it, it's going to help us replenish the pot. And if we hang on to it, given the location of it, we could probably get as good a return from single lets or from serviced accommodation, but spreading our risk out a little bit rather than having too many HMO rooms in the same location.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks for that. So next, we are going to dig into the investors. I know people are very interested in that and the 1.5 million that you've secured through private investment so far. But before we sort of go into that, can we just talk about how you finance that deal that we just talked about, the new build? Because when you're financing a refurbishment, so you've got development, because you've got significant development costs there, rather than buying an asset, it's sometimes more difficult to finance. So how have you financed that one?
So it's kind of two stages of investment on that one. The first thing we had to do was to buy the land, and we have got a joint venture partner in with us from the start on that. So they put in the full purchase price of the land and they got a percentage of the equity in that deal. Because of that, we have got a limited company structure with them. There is no charge against the land. So it meant that we could then go out and raise further finance against the actual development costs. So that's what we've done. We've got development finance approved for the actual build costs. And that was, you know, again, quite an involved process, making sure that our figures, which are usually kind of finger in the air, actually stacked up. We had to get a QS involved to verify everything that we were doing. Then obviously their legal team and their own in-house QS and everything had to do all of their due diligence. But ultimately, they're going to fund the project in a couple of different tranches. So with development finance, typically how it seems to work is that they will release the funds in arrears. So you need to secure the land, you need to pay for that, obviously, and you'll also need a chunk of the development costs up front to get you to the stage where the development company will send their surveyor onto site and say, yeah, you've done 50 grand's worth of work, or you've done 100 grand's worth of work, here's a check for the work that you have already done. So although development finance companies will lend against the work, they're going to do it in arrears. So we also need an element of finance in order to do that. So we've got some of our own funds that will help us get to each of these checkpoints or different stage gates. And then the development finance company will come and reimburse us for that. And we can use that to fund the next stage. So, yeah, a little bit complicated. But, you know, as I said, even with the cost of finance included, we should still net 100 grand from it.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing that the development finance, that was a long process as well.
Securing it was. It's just, again, you know, it's just another hurdle, another hoop that you have to jump through. So,
yeah. Okay. So let's go into the attracting investors and how you like to work with investors. So can you tell us a little bit how you started working with investors? Because there was a time when you were using all your own money and you weren't sure whether investors would really come in with you. So walk us on from what happened from there.
Yeah, we were a little bit hesitant, I suppose, to look at using other people's money. We'd had a couple of small bits and pieces from our parents to help us get started when we were younger. But we thought, you know, if we want to get into this seriously, we need more money than we have on the table, particularly when we wanted to replace two people's incomes in a short space of time. These HMOs were eating up a lot of money. We were typically buying projects that were very run down, and we're not talking 20 grand renovations. Most of ours are getting up close to 100 grand, if not more. So we're spending a lot of money on the renovations. The projects could be 6 to 12 months long when you factor in planning. And you know, as most people will be aware, refinancing can take a while as well. So the cash would be tied up for a minimum of 12 months, and we wanted to be doing more than one project at a time. We were chatting to someone who was giving us a bit of advice early on in our sort of full-time investing, and she introduced us to this idea of raising private funds, which most people are aware of, but it was, you know, this was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It was a relatively new idea to us beyond just looking at, you know, what your parents or your close friends could afford to lend you. We were dubious about whether or not it would actually work. We thought, why on earth would anyone give you money to go and invest in another project? You know, you've got a lot of perceived risk involved. Like I say, we were pretty new to this. We thought it would be a bit of a no-brainer for people to say, no, I don't fancy doing this. But we were encouraged repeatedly to go out. And what we were encouraged to do was to come up with a list of about 20 people. Could be 10 people, could be 30 people, but sit down together. We brainstormed a list of anyone that we thought might have a bit of cash lying around. We didn't need to know how much cash they had or where it came from, but we were thinking about people like, you know, small business owners, friends that were nearing retirement, people in the corporate world that maybe had access to their pension, or, you know, if they just got a big share payout, something like that. It could have been any reason, an inheritance, but just come up with a list of people that might have any amount of money sitting there. Could be $5,000, could be £500,000. And we sent them an email that was pretty straightforward saying, we have got, you know, this, so very briefly, this is our track record. This is the type of thing that we have done so far. This is what we are looking to do. This is the next project that we are looking for. And it was an actual real life project. It was one that we had found that we thought we wanted to proceed with. We knew it probably wouldn't happen because the market was quite hot, and by the time that we found investors and secured the money and everything, it would be gone. But we were very certain that we wanted to use a real case study in case there were any questions about it. We could say, well, this one was sold, but this is what we thought would have happened. Anyway, we sent out this email with a real life deal in it and said, we're looking to raise funds on it. We're putting some of our money into this, but we don't have enough money to do it all. We will be willing to pay an investor 20%. And we'd been told to offer 10%. We said, go out and try to raise funds at 10%. And I'm sure you'll be surprised at the response you got. And I was like, that's BS. Nobody is ever going to lend me money at 10%. Didn't believe it at all. A lot of self-doubt. So I was like, I'm good. The reason I sent this email was more to prove this person who was giving us advice wrong, rather than to think that we'd actually raise money. Uh-huh. And I sat there for about an hour dead smug with myself. Nobody had responded. And I was like, told you so. No one's going to lend a property investor money. And then after about an hour, the first email came in. Mike, love to do this. Where do I sign? What do you need from me? And then after a couple more hours, next email came in. Yeah, Mike, I'm on board. What do I do? So I was like, bugger, I've just offered 20%. And we'd kind of gone from no one's ever going to lend us money to actually quite a few people are keen to lend us money. And we've oversold it, and now we're a bit snookered because we don't want to go back on this. And true to our word, we stuck with it. The first time that we ever raised finance, we paid 20% interest on it. It cost us a lot of money, but you know, that's all well paid back now. And the first house that we did with investor finance still makes us over $1,000 a month. So whatever we paid out in interest payments is long been paid off, and you know, we're sitting pretty with that now. I'm still glad that we did it. And we've used that same process umpteen times with a much lower APR. Now typically we offer sort of 8 to 12%, and we still get the same sort of responses from people that, you know, we could have met them at a networking event, we could have been working with them in our past life in the corporate world, someone that's connected with us on LinkedIn said, you know, I really like the look of the project, so the pictures that you posted, Instagram, all of our social media channels. It was actually a really simple approach. An email with a real deal offering, you know, fixed return for a period of 12 months. If you want to know more about this type of project, give me a shout and I can talk you through the details. And there was a few things that came about. People originally said, I've spoken to my accountant or my solicitor and they've advised me against it. And since then we've said, your accountant is going to tell you not to do this, or your solicitor is going to tell you not to do this. And they come back now, and it's actually gone from a negative into a positive, because they come back and say, oh, you're right enough. My accountant told me not to do this, but I'm still keen to go ahead with it. So you kind of learn about the sort of responses that people give you and the objections that they give. And just such a simple process. Everyone, I would say 99% of people will have someone in their network that has money that they're looking to get a good return on. And like I say, you know, we had such an amount of doubt about it actually working, but it's so effective. And it was, from there, it just escalated with private finance, joint venture partners. And it has been by far and away the biggest way that we've been able to grow our portfolio is by using other people's money. So I'm so glad we sent that initial email.
And it is absolutely a phenomenal return, isn't it? Because if you think about it, 8 to 12%, so one of ours is for 400 grand. So the interest on that over a year is 32 grand. So somebody, and say people want to stay in, you know, that's a fantastic return. So of course people want to do that with their cash, especially somebody who's proven, who's done it, you know, time and again.
Yeah. And I think that was,
come on,
you know, for us, it was really a case of we didn't go down that route until we had made our own mistakes. We had invested with our own money for probably 5 years before we started looking at it full time. So we'd kind of, you know, we felt like we had earned the right to put ourselves out there and say, look, we know what we're doing. We've got a bit of a track record here. So I'm not suggesting everyone should go out and borrow money on day one, but it's definitely an option once you've got a bit of experience and you're looking to grow things.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I've loved about, you know, hosting these interviews. You really see that it is a thing. So many people are doing it and with great success. So we've got only got about 20 minutes left, actually, Mike. So I definitely want to come on to the building your personal brand, because that's something you've done superbly well. And that's obviously helped with gaining investments and so on. Can you remember that line you said to me? Be prolific, not perfect.
Yeah. And I think I said to you as well that that's not my line. I've stolen it from someone else. But so it's such a key part of what we do. I suppose it is just a case of being prolific rather than perfect. But caveat, I stole it from Nicole Bremner, and I'm pretty sure she stole it from someone else, possibly Daniel Priestley. So yeah, I can't take credit for it, but it is so true. And it has helped us massively, like you say.
Yeah. And what did you do, or what would you advise other people to do to build that personal brand and to help with things like getting investment?
So, I mean, a lot of people that we speak to have got some idea of what we do, and we say, you know, we've raised private finance and everything like that. They will, I guess their sort of default excuse is that, oh, well, you know, you've got this podcast, so I don't have that leverage. I don't have access to the same network that you do. Funnily enough, I would say that the majority of our investors haven't come from the podcast. That seems to be a very different audience. And the people who listen to the podcast, they're active investors in their own right. We occasionally get people that say, I've been listening for a while, and you know, I've decided that I don't have the time to do this on my own, so I'd like to invest with you. But that's the bulk of our investment comes from our existing network or from our social media profiles. So I think, you know, don't be put off by the fact that we've been running the podcast for a number of years. We have built up our Instagram and our LinkedIn, and our we do more on YouTube these days as well. That's all been built up in the past 18 months or so, relatively short space of time. And it's completely unrelated to the podcast, in as much as the content that we're putting out there are pictures of our own projects, they're, you know, video tours of the sites that we're working on. It is not dependent on the interviews that we have done with our guests. So I think social media has been by far and away the biggest, and I know it's what everyone says, but I think for us it has been a case of really picking the platform that we resonate with the most. And for us, most recently, that's been Instagram. Victoria is the one that's behind the Instagram account most of the time. She's quite a visual person. She's quite interested in interiors, and Instagram fits the bill for that sort of outlet perfectly. It's a very visual place. And it's quite a close-knit community as well. You know, on Facebook, you could be in a group with 10,000 other property investors, and everyone's got their opinions and different ways of doing things. Whereas Instagram seems a lot more supportive and positive, and generally just a bit of a nicer place to interact with people. So we picked one place, and for us that was Instagram. It could be, you know, people are doing great things on LinkedIn. There's a friend of ours, Lizzie Fraser, who has really only been looking at LinkedIn for probably 6 months, and the reach that she is getting now just by posting regular content, updates on what she's working on, it's phenomenal, reaching thousands upon thousands of people. And I think trying to do that rather than trying to post a little bit here and a little bit there, you know, a post on Twitter one day, Instagram the next, Snapchat, YouTube, I think just pick one that you like, that you can get comfortable with, and just make that your channel to market. And then, go on, sorry.
Good. No, carry on.
So I was just going to say, then it's just a case of showing people, you know, what you stand for, what you represent, even down to things like, you know, we refer to our tenants as housemates rather than tenants. They're our customers rather than tenants. You know, it's looking at, it's trying to present yourself in a way that other people resonate with. And I think, you know, the old saying, if you, this is what I say, the old saying, and then I totally forget what the saying is, but, you know, something along the lines of, if you try to be all things to all people, you'll be nothing to anyone, or something like that. You're not going to please everyone all of the time. So we don't try to, we are very much, you know, young couple that are quite, I suppose, quite open to challenges and taking on slightly riskier projects. And we're very vocal about that. A lot of what we buy has got structural issues or planning permission, you know, difficulties, things that would be difficult to overcome. But for us, it's a case of, yes, these are risky projects, but so far, touch wood, we've got a pretty good success rate. Everything that we've tried to get planning on, we've had planning approved for. All the structural issues that we've faced, we have fixed. So, you know, I suppose we're a bit, that's kind of what we're looking to do from a project point of view. It's, you know, we take on things that other people are a bit scared of. All of our interiors are done to a very high end. So we're very much going after the young professional market and giving people a nice place to live. For us, we feel like our profits come as a result of giving people a nice place to live, rather than thinking, well, if we take shortcuts here, if we paint everything magnolia, or, you know, we don't look after our housemates, we don't replace things if they get broken and make our profit that way, that's not really what we stand for. So it's just trying to convey that in everything that we post, putting more detail behind the captions that we use on the images, and trying to talk to our audience and explain to them, you know, this is what we're doing, this is why we do it. Nothing is a sales pitch, but everything is selling what we are trying to achieve, so that naturally people speak to us and say, love what you guys do, how can we work together? It's then quite a natural conversation, rather than us being on Instagram or Facebook saying, do you want to make 12% return on our next project? You know, fill in this investor form and get back to us. So it's just kind of trying to get your voice and just constantly be out there, be the person that people think of first when they mention property investment or development in your local area. And that's, you know, it's not anything new. It's not anything unique or clever. We've just followed what other people have done before us. But, you know, the thing is, it works. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. But you hear these things time and time again. I've heard it from 200 people on the podcast. The most successful ones have done this as well. And it's just a case of, well, you listen to enough people doing it, all of a sudden you start to do it yourself and it works. Or you can just keep making excuses and say, yeah, I don't think that's for me. And you'll be in the same situation 12 months from now, 12 years from now. So it's just a case of getting started, really.
Fantastic advice, really. I mean, and you do make it sound so simple. Just get out there and show who you are consistently, and show up showing what you're doing. So I think that is great advice. We have had another question. Quick question regarding... this is from Josh Senior. Hi, Josh. and it says, quick question regarding credibility starting out. We have an interested landlord who has responded to one of our letters, and he is asking for our company number and registered address before he will speak to us. I am worried he will see the fact that we have only been trading for a month or two and see our residential address, as we don't have an office. Okay.
Yeah. He probably will. And I guess, you know, that's where it comes down to a choice, I suppose. Do you want to be honest with him and say, look, we have only been trading for a month or two, but this is why we are still the right choice for you. You can't fake your history, or you might want to try, but you will get caught out eventually, right? So I wouldn't propose going down that route. I think you just need to be open and honest with him. If it was me, I guess what I would be trying to do is to speak to him face to face. I think you can convey your personality and your message a lot better face to face. The letters work really well to get that initial contact, but then as soon as you can, you want to either be meeting them at their property, or, you know, sitting down in a coffee shop with them and having that face to face conversation with them to show them, you know, you are, they're buying into you at the end of the day. They're not buying into 2 months trading record or you know, you've got companies with 10-year trading records, 20-year trading records that go bust. He's obviously got something in his mind that he feels that's important, and you need to kind of try and understand why that is so important to him. Maybe he has been stung before by someone who doesn't have a history, or maybe he's just an old school guy that, you know, he might just be sort of trying to twist the screws a little bit and make you squirm and see how you react to it. But you're selling yourself at the end of the day. And I'd go back to him and say, look, you know, be honest, we are a young company, but this is, if you've got any, you know, if you've done any flips in the past or you manage any of your own portfolio, I assume this is some sort of like rent to rent shot that you're going after. So what have you done that can overcome his objection to you only having a 2-month company history that is going to give him the confidence back? And like I say, it could be your history managing other people's properties, managing your own portfolio. Even from a corporate world, you know, we've all got a heck of a lot of experience from our day jobs that you might not think is directly relatable, but just, you know, be open with them and say, this is a new gig. This is why we've started to do it. This is what we have got in place to make sure that your property is well looked after. And maybe pose a question to him, what would give you the confidence in us to go forward? Is it, you know, a guarantee from, you know, is it some sort of charge over another property that we've got? Is it, you know, it could be any number of things that give him that peace of mind and that confidence. But I think you just need to have the conversation with him and see why he's really asking for that and see what you can do to overcome it. But talking about charges on properties and stuff, we're quite comfortable giving away a lot in terms of charges, in terms of equity in deals, in terms of anything that we feel is necessary to get the deal done, because the long-term benefits of that, if you give away a little bit more on this one and you get his blessing going forwards, you've then got an advocate for you that maybe knows other people with properties. He's maybe got a testimonial for your website once that's up and running to say, you know, I was really dubious about these guys, but they came on board. They've been running my project for the last 6 months and it's been a breath of fresh air. So to get you started, I'm always, you know, for us, it's always a case of, you know, how much do we need to give away to get the ball rolling? Momentum has a huge importance for us. We are very much a case of, you know, multiple deals at once. The benefits come from that, and economies of scale and being able to hire a team quicker and all that sort of stuff. So I think maybe you do need to, if you can, overcome his objection somehow, be willing to give away a bigger piece of the pie, be willing to manage it for him for less, give him more every month as a rental amount, and, you know, just get the ball rolling.
Because I want to come to a few of your things, Mike, so I just wanted to interject quickly.
Okay, sorry.
Josh has said, thanks. And he's sort of summarised what you're saying. So that was great advice. Thanks for that question, Josh. So back to you, Mike, because we're coming into the final few minutes, I just wanted to share some of the other things that you've got going on. If you are doing HMOs, managing HMOs, then Mike has got some amazing online training, which is fantastic value as well. You know what Mike was just saying, he likes to give things away. Well, this virtually is being given away. Can you tell us a bit about it, Mike?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, our sort of, I suppose our going in point from the start has always been to give away value first, and then the benefits will come back. We don't always know how those benefits do come back to us, but you give enough away and trust me, you will get a lot back in return. And that has been, you know, a sort of underwriting concept in everything that we have done. So before I talk about how you can pay us money, which would obviously be nice, the podcast is probably going to teach you, if you're just getting started, everything you need to know about different strategies, different ways to raise finance. It's a commitment. We've got, you know, 230 something episodes now of 30 to 40 minute interviews. But if you're looking to get started and you want to get inside the minds of some of the best property investors, go and listen to the free podcast, and that will teach you so much about different strategies, different areas in the UK, how different people have succeeded. On top of that, we have got a course that it's online, it's video based. I don't really buy into, you know, 3 days away from your family in a hotel conference room. It's something that you can dip in and out of as and when you want, from the comfort of your own home, and you can go back and revisit it as many times as you want. And we've tried to bundle everything that we know about finding, funding, renovating and managing HMOs into, I think it's about 14 hours worth of video content, as well as a private Facebook group and a few other bits and pieces like that. It's called Inside HMO Investing. Obviously, original title given the podcast is called Inside Property Investing, but you know, why complicate things too much? And we sell that for £199, I think it is at the moment. So it's, you know, a fraction of the cost of some of these three-day courses. I think multiple times the value. I would say that I'm biased, but you know, the feedback we get is that it is worth more than these courses, and it's a fraction of the price. So it's a great starting point for people looking to get the next steps. You know, we say for people who are actively investing and looking to scale or are on the brink of getting their first deal, it's a great place to start. And yeah, we've got a whole plethora of other free content and articles and stuff on the website as well. So hopefully, you know, even if you don't want to give us money, there's a huge amount of value that we can give you in all the free content that we've created.
You're giving it away at £199. Absolutely. Dan's just come on saying fantastic course and excellent value. And also your open days, if people want to come down and see your sites and learn and actually meet you guys.
Yeah. And that's me being a bit introverted and miserable. The one bad thing about building a sort of brand or a profile is that you get inundated with requests for, you know, free coffees and lunches and everything else. And, you know, it got to the stage where I could literally spend 9 o'clock on a Monday to 5 p.m. on a Friday and probably beyond that just having, you know, drinks, coffees, beers, lunches with people, giving away loads of advice. And, you know, I know this makes me sound miserable, Stephanie, but I think my time is worth more than a £3 coffee. They never even take you for an iced coffee. I don't even drink coffee for a start. But anyway, it was just we were spending a lot of time in these meetings and trying to help people as much as we could. But ultimately, it was having too much of an impact on our own business. So we thought, you know, if people are serious, if they do want to spend time with us, we'll happily give them loads of value as usual. So we started running these open days once a month. We take 8 people around 3 or 4 of our active projects, something that's just about to start, something that's midway through the process, and something that is completed and up and running, assuming we can get access and all that sort of stuff. We do that in the morning, and then we spend the afternoon doing like a roundtable mastermind session, find a nice coffee shop somewhere. You buy your own coffee this time, but you know, such is life. And yeah, we spend 3 or 4 hours chatting through whatever problems you've got. If you're struggling to find a good area for you, find investors, knowing how to manage your properties ongoing. It's just, you know, it's a great way we get to spend time with a group of great people. You get to meet obviously everyone else who then becomes part of your network, the other 7 people that'll be on the day as well. And again, you know, we like to keep them low cost, high value. So £150, come spend the day with us and find out all about how we run every element of our business.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Well, if you email me all your links as well, so I can add them to the. But if you just pop them in the,
I can stick them in the comments, right? So
yeah, pop them in the comments, and I'm going to add them elsewhere as well. So some fantastic resources. You've been absolutely fantastic, Mike. We haven't even covered half of.
No, I know. I feel like I rambled on too much about some things, and now we don't have the chance to talk about anything else. But
no, absolutely. You gave the right level of detail that you needed to give to explain some of these things are quite complex, but it's just that you have got so much going on and you've had so much going on that we couldn't cover it all in an hour with the best will in the world. So thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and for sharing all that you have done, and as well as all the materials that people can download free, or you can buy the course, or you can go on the open day if you want to meet Mike. And we will be putting up these pages in due course with more photos of the projects and so on. But you can see everything on his website. So can you give the Inside Property Investor, are you bringing your dog on?
I am. I was just going to say, you not only get to meet me, but you get to meet this little guy as well on the, if you come along to the open days. He doesn't seem that interested. He doesn't really understand how cameras work yet. But I thought, he's probably cuter than me. He's got a lot more hair than me as well. So, you know, for £150 for a cuddle with Blue, I think that's a bargain.
Yeah, absolutely. Count me in. And there are two of them.
Yeah, the other one's always sleeping somewhere. He's older and more miserable, but just as cuddly.
I'm saying nothing. Older and more miserable, you say. Saying nothing. No, only teasing.
Sorry, went off on a tangent.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks a million, Mike. Let's say good night and
Yeah.
move on. Thank you for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. And I guess, Stephanie, just to say it, there were a lot of things that we maybe didn't go into enough detail on. Happy to answer questions in the comments if if people watch this later on and have any questions, I'll try to keep an eye on that and go into as much detail as I can if people have got specific queries or anything. So, yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, hopefully we'll get to meet some cool people in the comments below as well.
Yeah, and I just want to just share this comment that Dan's put, brilliant interview, just the right amount of information. And with that, I'm just going to flag up that next week there won't be a live because I'm going to be away for my birthday. And although some people like Dan Brown are doing interviews from all over the world, but the following week, Dan Brown is going to be on the show talking about his first few HMO developments, which are both fantastic projects. So I hope that you will join us for that. So for now, it's bye from Mike.
Bye, Stephanie.
Bye, guys, and bye from me. See you guys in a couple of weeks. Bye for now.
Okay, guys, if you love a good networking event, then you need to check out our new events calendar at insidepropertyinvesting.com/events. Nice and simple, easy to remember. Our goal is to have a single place for every UK property networking event to be listed so that you can quickly find out what's going on around you and when the best events are taking place. I'd love to hear any feedback that you have got on this functionality and anything else we can do to make it better. Just go to insidepropertyinvesting.com/events in case you've forgotten that already and have a look around. Let me know what you think. And if you are the host or organizer of a networking event, then get in touch as well so that we can make sure that your event is listed. Drop an email to events@insidepropertyinvesting.com and we'll take care of it all for you.